Katamba Pandaveyasya Vajarshir Muninasaho Sangvadak Samabhut Tata Yatraisha Satvati Shutihi Katamba Pandaveyasya Rajarshir Muninasaho Samvadak Samabhutata Yatraisha Satvati Shutihi Katam. How is it? Va. Also. Pandaveyasya. Of the descendant of Pandu. Parikshit. Vajarishe. Of the king who was a sage. Munina. With the Muni. Saha. With. Samvadaha. Discussion. Samabhut. Took place. Tata. Oh, darling. Yatra. Whereupon. Esha. Like this. Satvati. Transcendental. Shrutihi. Essence of the Vedas. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. How did it so happen that King Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for this great transcendental essence of the Vedas, Bhagavatam, to be sung to him? Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is stated here as the essence of the Vedas. It is not an imaginary story, as it is sometimes considered by unauthorized men. It is also called Shukha Samhita, or the Vedic hymn spoken by Sri Shukadeva Goswami, the great liberated sage. We were hearing in the previous verses glorification of Shukadeva Goswami, who heard the Bhagavatam from his father, Vyasadev. His qualification, spiritual qualification, is indicated in those verses. So detached that he had no idea of the difference between a man and a woman. Nobody else like that. So when Shukadeva avoided even any proper rabbinical training, did not take Upanayanam or any proper education from his father. It's one thing if your father doesn't have much to teach, then you leave home to go to school somewhere where they can teach you something. But his father is Srila Vyasadeva, the greatest teacher. Even his disciples are greater teachers than anybody else. Even his disciples. So Shukadeva neglected the opportunity to study the Vedas and whatever he wanted to study from his father. He just left home immediately after taking birth. There's nobody that detached other than Shukadeva Goswami. That in itself makes him particularly qualified. Of course, being detached generally makes you qualified to become an impersonalist. Simply renunciation or disgust for everything in this material world If you're just simply disgusted, you'll probably become an impersonalist. And Shukadev at first was an impersonalist. But his super qualification, above and beyond just being detached, is that when he simply heard some short glimpse of the Bhagavatam by hearing a few verses, he immediately became extremely interested. This is his greater qualification, is that he's seriously interested in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, he's fit to be the speaker because of his interest in hearing. The professional reciters who falsely imitate Vyasa and Shukadeva without proper qualification, they're not so interested in hearing, they're interested in talking to make money. Just like a prostitute doesn't love the men she consorts with. They're just a way of getting money. They're offensive, dirty, exploitative men, and the only reason she lets them come near her because they have lots of money. And she's only interested in the money, the prostitute. Similarly, the professional Bhagavatam reciters are spiritual prostitutes. They're only in it for the money, most cases, or the fame. It's just the family business. They're not seriously interested in hearing the way Shukadev was. We want to become preachers because preachers are glorified. Preachers are on the top of the totem pole in our society. We want to be a preacher too. But you want to be a preacher of the Bhagavatam, you should become very seriously interested in studying the Bhagavatam. Not just you read it through quickly once, then you go out and preach. Okay, go out and preach. Practice. But if you want to become a real preacher, you have to be fully immersed in the Bhagavatam and very seriously interested in being the hearer. The proper disciple becomes a proper guru in his time, in due course of time. And the proper hearer can become a proper speaker. But without proper hearing, without adequate hearing, your speaking will be superficial. You'll sit on the seat and speak for maybe hours at length, but it won't have much to do with the real message of the Bhagavatam. If you haven't heard sufficiently and with sufficient attention and faith, Shushu Shrob Shodadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Shyan Mahatse Vaya Vipras Punyatirta Nishevanat. By serving the book and the person Bhagavatam, Mahatseva, and by having serious interest in hearing and in serving, and having faith that what you're hearing is not just stories, it's not mythology, it's not fiction, it's not just fantasy, it's the reality. Why can't we pay attention? Because we think that the garbage floating around in our brain, our anxiety about he's doing this to me and this problem is confronting me, my knee hurts, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that, I got this problem, that problem. Even a brahmachari's got problems. You know, a rat is eating his gopins, whatever it is. And we're absorbed in our petty, superficial, material lives. Even though we're supposed to be sadhakas, it's just inertia, conditioning. It's hard for us to give up our absorption in material life, at least on the mental plane. We've given it up externally. We're living in the ashram. We're following a strict schedule. And still the mind is somewhere else. The mind is still in the material world. And because we're so interested in our mental problems, we can't give proper attention, and we don't have the adequate faith. It's not just a matter of attention. You know, you can just flip a switch in your brain and turn it around. You can do that, but you have to do it over and over and over again, because if you don't have sincere faith and interest. Because we think that our material life is more important than what we hear in the Bhagavatam, we don't pay attention, and because we don't have full faith. Shushu Shokshodadanasya. When we develop sincere faith, when we're convinced that this is the reality, all these things happening in my external life, this is just illusion. I'm trapped in the illusion for the time being. But it's not my real life. Just like you're sitting in a movie theater watching a cartoon. And the mouse throws a dynamite stick at the cat and blows off his head. Don't get too upset. It's just a cartoon. It's not the reality. You can watch the cartoon. It'll be over in 5 minutes. And then you can go about your regular life. Don't think that the illusion is the reality. Don't get so concerned over it. Well, we should get less and less concerned over our material life. Not that we want to obliterate our personal existence and blot our own personalities out, but this is not our real personality. Our real personality resides in the spiritual world, in relationship with Krishna. We have an ecstatic relationship with Krishna that we have forgotten. And instead, we're pursuing these material relationships, which are miserable. If they're not miserable now, they'll become miserable later. I read I'm reading these short two or three paragraph stories in Thai because I'm studying the language. I have a book that has these short stories. And the story is called The Wife Barks. And the man was visiting a psychologist, consulting about the problems in his marriage. He's been married for 10 years. He tells the psychologist, "In the beginning, when I was first married, I was very happy. Every night I'd come home from work having so much agitation in the office, I'd come home from work and the dog would jump on me and bark and run around me in circles wagging his tail. And my wife would very lovingly bring my slippers and give them to me. Now everything is turned backwards. I come home and the dog has the slippers in his mouth and drops them at my feet. And the wife comes and starts howling and barking at me." The psychologist says, "What's the problem? I don't see why you're upset. You're still getting the same services. You're getting your shoes and you're getting barked at." So anyway, that's what happens to love in the material world. It goes sour. Just like you like the milk. You like the milk sweets. But it says on the box, consume the same day. After 2 or 3 days, they're going to be rotten. And if you eat them, you'll get sick. Like that, the love of family and friends in the material world, after a few years, goes rotten. It's just the way the material world is built. So we're so interested in this rotting life. It's on the process of rotting. And we're not enough interested in our real eternal life. Shukadeva and Parikshit, their qualification, both of them, is that they're seriously interested in the subject matter of transcendence. They're both very avid students of the Bhagavatam. Shukadeva has graduated to the post of teacher, but he was also a student before from his father Vyasadeva. Very serious students of the Bhagavatam. They consider this recitation of Bhagavatam more important than all the silly things happening in material life. Both Shukadeva and Parikshit. Shukadeva is the great renunciant. I think this is working. Let me turn it up a bit. Maybe. Shukadeva, he's the prototype renouncer. He wants nothing to do with anything material. Parikshit, from the transcendental point of view, is also so situated. He's also fully renounced, but it doesn't seem like that from the outside. He's a king involved in so much politics and material affairs, killing, punishing, fighting wars, consorting with women, probably taking liquor sometimes, because that's what kings do. He seems to be a materialist on the outside. But actually, he's on equal level with Shukadeva. He also has no interest in these material things. He's just, by the circumstance of his external position as king, required to have some connection with these material things, but he has no interest. Actually doesn't. The proof is that when he was cursed to die in 7 days, he reacted immediately in the right way. He said, fine, this life is illusion anyway. And he knew that from before. He was simply continuing his material life because it was his duty. It was his duty to his grandparents to continue the reputation of the Pandu dynasty, to be an exemplary king. But he had no interest in material power, material fame, and sense gratification. No interest at all. So when he was when he was informed that you're going to die in 7 days, he was very satisfied to hear that. Anybody here would be glad after a visit in the doctor's office finding out you have 7 days to live? Would you be glad to hear that? Maybe some of us would. But generally, we're not. We want to live a long time. We have more enjoyment to do. We have more business to finish up in this material world. And we'll beg our doctor, can you make me live a few more years? 7 days isn't enough time to do what I have to do. Because we have other things to do besides hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Shonaka Rishi is very curious to know how did this amazing dialogue occur? What were the circumstances? Tell us the history of it. This is glorious. The book Bhagavatam is so amazing, so spiritually potent, that even the history of how it got spoken in the first place has great spiritual value to hear. And therefore, Shonaka is asking about this. What were the circumstances that led to Parikshit sitting down and hearing the Bhagavatam from Shukadev? Hare Krishna. Therefore, the rest of this first canto is the introduction to that. It all is a systematic history of the manifestation of Srimad Bhagavatam. First, going back a generation, or going back a few years, to how Vyasadev got involved with the Bhagavatam, how he received it in his meditation, and then taught it to Shukadev. How did that happen first? And then, starting with chapter 7, how did Parikshit get involved in this? The history of his being saved in the womb by Krishna is actually there in the eighth chapter. And then his birth is described beginning at with the 12th chapter. And then the departure of his grandfathers from this world after the departure of Krishna. And then how Parikshit confronted Kali and did not allow him to take over his kingdom. And then he got cursed to die and reacted perfectly by deciding to sit down at the banks of the Ganga and prepare himself for his death. Although it seems he didn't know how to prepare, at least he didn't reveal to anybody that he knew. He greeted all the sages who came to be with him at that time by asking them, Atachavak pricham imam vipriche. Itikvitachayam. What is it? Priyamanayar. Vipab Shabra iti krityatayam sarvat mana briya mayanais chasarvam shudham tatrab vishatabi yuktaha. My dear sages, let me ask you. I've greeted you respectfully and given you honor. Now I have a question to ask of you all. Greatest sages in the universe, including Narada, Vyas were there. Right? Yes. And other very eminent, learned, and self-realized sages. So he took the opportunity to ask them, "Now I'm about to die. So what should a man who's about to die do? How should he take advantage of the last days of his life?" He at least acted as if he didn't know that what he should do is hear Bhagavatam. Maybe he did know, but he's asking the question anyway, for the sake of the drama. And what happened then? Shukadeva appeared right at that moment. This is the culmination of the whole first canto. This is the reply. What happened? Pariksit got cursed, and Shukadeva, without any invitation, without being called for, he just happened to appear exactly at the right place at the right time. Shukadeva doesn't have any interest in anything material. He's not going to go to Hastinapur for shopping or sightseeing. The only reason he's coming there is to speak to Bhagavatam. Even though nobody told him, nobody scheduled Bhagavat Saptaha, and with the billboard with Shukadeva's picture on it. That wasn't done. There was no advertising. He just happened to come there. All the other sages also just happened to come there at the right time. But the culmination of the whole drama is Shukadeva's appearance, and then Pariksit asking these last questions at the end of the 19th chapter, or asking his questions. That's the answer. That's how this conversation happened between the king and the sage. That's the circumstances. And behind the circumstances is why it happened. Because the speaker had no interest in anything material. And Pariksit, even though he was externally compromised, entangled in material affairs, when the time came, he was ready to renounce it all immediately. And he was ready, even if he apparently didn't know that he should hear the Bhagavatam. As soon as Shukadeva arrived, he took advantage. Oh yes, this is what I'm supposed to do. Let me inquire from Shukadeva, who is famous as the perfect student of the Bhagavatam, having heard from his father Vyasadeva. Let me inquire from him, and he'll speak the Bhagavatam to me. That's what I should do with these 7 days. That's what we should do with the 70,000 or 7,000 or 70 or 7 days we have left. We should every day seriously listen to the Bhagavatam. We have a program here where we hear the Bhagavatam several times a day. Don't avoid it. We're not here just to study grammar. We're studying grammar so we can become more expert in studying and teaching the Bhagavatam. Without the Bhagavatam, this is just a material program, and it's ruined. And you won't benefit much spiritually from it. But if we keep the Bhagavatam in the center, every day we hear it, not just once, but we attend this class, we attend the reading of the chapter before, we have our class on the commentaries, we have our overview class. How many times is that? Four? Four classes on the Bhagavatam every day. Where else is there an institution where they have four Bhagavatam classes every day? We have to be eager to follow that program. We should be eager to follow that program. Maybe it's too much for some, but let's try it and see what the result is. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes. Yes.
For living, and then is it proper to think like this, that anyway, in this life I got to listen to Bhagavatam and the association of pure devotees by the mercy of Krishna?
Yes.
So it's ultimately, he has the strength to arrange, so I need not pray to live more. Like even if I leave this body, he'll make arrangement just like he has made now. He'll make arrangement even in my next life that there will be...
Well, jivo va maro va. You can live or die, it doesn't matter. You can live for 2 more days or for 200 more years. It doesn't matter. In this body or in another body, you should take advantage of the opportunity of your human life. In our case, well, it is the opportunity is the opportunity to serve the Supreme Lord. Become knowledgeable about what he is and what our relationship and what our business with him is. And to actually practice that, maybe even become perfect in this life. But whether we complete the course in this life or whether we have to take birth, whether we flunk the exam and have to take birth again, we can continue. We shouldn't want to have to. We shouldn't want to fail the course and have to take it again, because it means sitting in the womb for another 9 months and suffering the pangs of birth, and being in the mode of ignorance as an infant, going through all that again. We should prefer not to suffer that again. Better if we can finish our business now. But what is our business? Our business is not liberation. Our business is the practice of pure devotional service. There are various ways to perform devotional service, but one of the prominent ways is Srimad Bhagavat Artanam Aswado Rasikaiksaha. We're specializing in that. And if we're studying Sanskrit, it's just to facilitate that Bhagavat Arta Aswada. If you know Sanskrit, you'll know what those words mean. But even if you don't know any Sanskrit, if you know the idea that I should be relishing the Bhagavatam, whether you know a word of Sanskrit or any grammar at all, that's less important. The important thing is to have the taste. And a literate person, or at least a person who doesn't know Sanskrit, can have the taste. And a person that knows Sanskrit up, you know, backwards and forwards could not have the taste. The most important thing is developing that taste of Bhagavat Rasa Aswada, relishing the messages and the ecstasies of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Did that answer it, or did I get
a little more to ask? Little more to ask in the sense that there are two things that we are holding on to. If we want to live in this life and the association that we have got now, that's one virtue, to hold on to the association of pure devotees that you have now. And another virtue is that you trust Krishna and you accept and you're seeing the reality that he is controlling everything. So even if I'm killed, even if I lose in this.
That is better. Rather than dictate to Krishna, you know, let me live for this many years, let him decide. He's time, we're not. We don't know how time works. We don't really know what's better for us. Whether it's better to die tomorrow or die after 100 years, we don't know which one would actually be better for our spiritual progress, or which would we could do more service in this body, or maybe we can get a better body. Let Krishna decide. It's better to let Krishna decide if you can. Just let go. Stop trying to control your own life and let Krishna control it. It's better. Because you're going to have to die anyway. And if you can't let go, it's going to be hard to die. Better to learn how to die easily by letting go and let Krishna be in control. Because you're going to have to die. Today or tomorrow, you have to die. So practice learning how to die.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We got the mic.
Oh, okay, sure. Thanks. I just had two small questions. The first one is about Prabhupada mentions that one of the names of the Bhagavatam is Shuka Samhita. But I was wondering, is there also another Shuka Samhita? Because I recently noticed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Rupa Goswami quotes the Shuka Samhita.
There is a Shuka Samhita that appeals to the Mayavadis. It might be the other Shukadev, not this one. Or some Shukadev who talks Mayavad philosophy, somebody else. Because I think the philosophy in the Shuka Samhita is mostly impersonal. It's a different book.
Yeah.
This one's also called. That's okay.
It's also a conversation between Shuka and Prakshit?
I don't think so. It's spoken, I don't know. But not. It's spoken by Shukadev, that's all. To somebody.
Okay, and the other question was... how do we, when somebody presents the story of Parikshit from the Mahabharat, how do we counteract that?
Can you tell?
Roughly speaking, that when he, according to the Mahabharat story, when he heard that he had 7 days to live, he constructed a huge fort that was up on these poles off the ground, and he had all these guards around, and he was just hiding out in this fort trying to avoid dying.
Get killed.
Apparently, according to that.
Well, he cannot have done both. The same person couldn't have done both. Yeah. So the best explanation is not the same person. It's a different Parikshit in a different Dwarpa Yuga. I don't know if that's the official or the preferred explanation of the Acharyas, but it seems to be the easiest one. It's somebody else with the same name. That, you know, the Mahabharata is describing a different Dwarpa Yuga.
The Acharyas haven't really discussed it.
I don't know what they say. Madhvacharya, in his Bhagavat Tatpurya Nirnaya, has anything to say about it? No. Okay. It's definitely a question. This doesn't look like the same Parikshit.
Yeah.
So I would think the easiest explanation would be to say it's not the same Parikshit, it's somebody else. It's not like the same person is inconsistent, is schizophrenic, you know, on one occasion he's ready to give up his life and the next he's not. I think Parikshit is a more consistent person than that. Yes.
This present Vyasadeva, he wrote, we know the three books, Mahabharata. This present Vyasadeva, he wrote three books. One is the Mahabharata and Bhagavatam. Two books. So
no, he wrote the Vedanta Sutra, three books. No, he only wrote two.
Yeah,
he didn't write the Puranas, he didn't write the Vedas, he only edited them. And he didn't write the Bhagavatam because the Bhagavatam is Satvati Shruti. It's Shruti, according to Jiva Goswami, it's eternal. Okay. So it was there before Vyasadeva received it as meditation. So he wrote only two books, Mahabharata and Vedanta Sutra. Those are his compositions.
So that is the present Vyasadeva who was there during Krishna's...
Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas.
So he would have most probably written the same history of Parikshit because he would have most probably written the same history of Parikshit. I mean, the Parikshit which he is describing would be most probably been the same Parikshit where the present Dwapara Yuga would have been there. So how would we say that...
You mean that the same Vyasadeva is in the Mahabharata?
I mean, the present, just previous age, the Dwapara Yuga, when Krishna was there and Parikshit was there, Vyasa was also there.
Yes.
So he wrote the Mahabharata, so he would have described most probably the same Parikshit Maharaj, which is being described.
Well, maybe not. Maybe Mahabharata is mixing up different ages. Or maybe there's some other explanation. That complicates the matter, that it seems like the same Vyasadeva is also in Mahabharata. Same Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas is there in the Bhagavatam, and he's also there in the history of the Pandavas, and Parikshit was born while the Pandavas were still there. So if it's the same Vyasadeva, why not the same Parikshit? Is there another explanation?
I didn't hear it in detail, but I think Gogavinda Maharaj said something to the effect that it's kind of like metaphorical, the description in Mahabharata, because it's like when Parikshit heard the Bhagavatam, then he felt himself so secure. He felt himself as if he were in a fort.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's a more detailed way he said it.
But okay, I won't argue with that. That's one possible explanation. I agree with you.
How Sukadeva Goswami, he achieved such a taste for Bhagavatam? It was his previous life sanskar or out of his...
Yeah, previous life. He already had the taste from his previous life.
Can you...
Otherwise, if his samskaras were just impersonal, it wouldn't be so easy to change him. So he was just on the outside an impersonalist, but inside he had those traces of attachment to the Bhagavatam from his previous life. So if we have to take birth again, whatever taste we have developed for the Bhagavatam will be there inside, and it will eventually come out. But eventually, you have to go through so much aggravation before it comes out again. We know in our own, in this life, we suffered for so many years before we felt any attraction to the Bhagavatam. When we started to feel attraction to Krishna's service, to his names, to his prasadam, and to the Bhagavatam and the Gita, then our lives changed. But before that, we suffered for so many years. Do you want to do that again? Nope. So we should not just be complacent and think, well, I can continue in the next life. Continue in the next life after suffering for many years. Why do we want to do that? Even suffer less. Less or more, it's still to be avoided. Even take birth on the heavenly planets where there's not that much physical suffering, or no physical suffering, just some mental suffering. But who knows how long it will be as a demigod? You know, a couple of million years before you remember your attraction to, or maybe you'll never remember it because you'll be distracted as a demigod. So even, that's not desirable. That's less desirable. Better take birth on the earth and suffer your childhood and youth. Or maybe you'll get the opportunity to become attracted to Bhagavatam in your childhood if you're lucky. But it's taking chances. To not seriously cultivate our interest now is taking chances with our future life. Who knows what will happen? Yes. And if we're not seriously interested, if our taste is weak, we can commit aparadhas and get into serious trouble. Yes. Is that okay?
Yeah, some says that Sukadeva Goswami was parrot of Radharani and
yes, that story is there, but it's in a different Purana, so it may not be the same Sukadeva. Does Prabhupada say that? That he was this parrot? I don't think so. We don't hear that from Prabhupada. We hear it from some people who are taking it from a different Purana, so therefore we cannot be sure that it's even the same Sukadeva. Unless I'm wrong, did Prabhupada say that this is Sukadeva? I don't think so. Somebody else told us that. And somebody else doesn't have the same authority as Prabhupada. And other Puranas don't have the same authority as the Bhagavatam. So you're hearing it from somebody else, from some other Purana, that's not the highest authority.
They say that Sukadeva Goswami...
Who's they anyway? We don't even know who... You can't even say who they is. You got some other authority and you can't even identify him.
They say that Sukadeva Goswami did not utter the name of Radharani.
Yeah, so, but why take why even discuss it? We're not even sure if it's correct. We got a doubtful authority. Why even pursue it? First of all, verify the authority of it. Then we'll discuss that story. You know, somebody says that this happened, but we don't. That's not our process of learning. Somebody said something. We want to hear from perfectly reliable authority. First, verify the authority.
I heard from one
okay.
Sannyasi.
Oh.
He was in Udupi.
Yes.
And we met in Padayatra during Padayatra time.
Okay.
So we are discussing that is Pejwar Mutt.
Yes.
So
okay, so Sannyasi at Pejwar Mutt. Okay.
So he said that we asked why the Nyuna Aradhitam, that sloka. So he replied that he was the parrot of Radharani, so that he did not repeat this name of Radharani out of respect.
Yes? Okay. I'm not saying it's not true, but why didn't Prabhupada say it? Yes? I don't know. Jiva Goswami doesn't mention such a thing in the Siddharthas. Maybe somebody does. Somebody can inform me. Any of Prabhupada's predecessors in our line mentioned it. If not, why? Why not? It would seem, if that's verifiable, it would be significant. Why don't any of our acharyas mention it? Maybe somebody does and I'm not aware of it. Yes? They don't, well, I guess some of them do. Some, unless Hari Guru was got, you know, didn't hear it right. But you know, they don't. They generally. I think some of them do. You know, some of them are real. You know, I'll say she's a. Anyway, I won't repeat it. Say nasty things about Radharani, but I don't think they all do. I think there's some different opinions. There's no consensus. That makes it questionable. They, you know, if they can't even agree amongst themselves, why should we accept it?
Sorry. I think Radisham had something to say. And if I have...
Well, you got the mic. Use it.
Okay. Well, sometimes I know some devotees, they have the attitude, they're getting older, and maybe they had difficulty in their spiritual life. And their attitude is, oh, next life, I hope I'll have a better chance. And they're getting older, so how to...
Well, maybe somebody is honest. You know, I've made a mess of this life. I'm going to have to take birth again. You know, he's just resigned to it. Not such a pleasant prospect, but I can't do any better. Sorry. So if you're just honest about it, it might be appropriate. You know, I'll finish up in the next life. I'll do all the services I should have done for Prabhupada in this life next time. It depends. For some individuals, it may be appropriate. But it's not an excuse. You know, you're still young. You still could get it together. You're not ready to die yet. You got so many years ahead of you. So don't make excuses. Take advantage of the opportunity. Yes, sir.
Thank you for inspiration. You were saying about Srimad Bhagavatam Katha every day. And when you are traveling preaching, often asked to give some systematic seminars on nectar of instruction, and sometimes even astrology. Psychology, Ayurvedic, something like that.
Yes.
Because people are more interested in that, even the new devotees.
Yes.
And is there sufficient not to give some systematic, but just give Bhagavata Katha or
Bhagavatam? It's sufficient just to sit down and discuss Bhagavatam every day.
Yeah, yeah.
There might be some advantage to making it systematic. Might be. I find it that when I try to make it systematic, it just gets dry. And I waste so much time preparing, and then I don't use what I prepare. So it depends. For some teachers and some students, it might be better to make it systematic. But the important thing is to hear the Bhagavatam, even unsystematically. I don't know about hearing astrology or psychology if it's not centered on the Bhagavatam. I don't know the value of that. Is that okay? Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, that's the important thing. Systematic or not systematic? If it helps people get interested, okay. If it helps people just hand out sweet balls during, you know, before the Bhagavatam class, okay. But the important thing is to evoke the attraction to the Bhagavatam. Okay, we should stop now. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.